I'm Corey Grushka, the founder of Stories Bureau, a creative agency that specializes in storytelling and multimedia creative for all things insights.
And I'm Simrat Saran, a marketing expert with over 15 years' experience in helping the biggest brands create true memories.
I want to inspire you to think bigger, broader, and more creatively.
And I want to push you to make you think and go beyond the job description.
Let's get started.
LinkedIn is, as we all know, one of the world's biggest social media sites where professionals come together and explore opportunities within, outside, as well as across intellectual conversations that happen on the platform. Today, we have the honor of speaking to Kendra Speed, who leads Consumer Insights. So if you've ever gotten a survey saying LinkedIn wants your opinion, she is partly responsible for it, but she's also responsible for a lot of the fantastic work that's been happening on the LinkedIn platform. So with that, let's jump into the conversation with Kendra.
Hi, I'm Kendra Speed. I have the pleasure of leading consumer market research at LinkedIn. A little bit about me, Corey and I had the opportunity to meet while I was leading up our go-to-market insights team at Dropbox. Today, I have the pleasure of leading up consumer market research at LinkedIn. I view myself as kind of like this classically trained market researcher, but I think even beyond market research, I like to think of myself as a strategist. I'm a dreamer and really like thinking about what the future might hold.
Yeah. Kendra, what is the insights team like at LinkedIn? Kind of curious. Where do you all sit with the reporting and how do you all work over there?
Yeah, so we're within the marketing side of the organization. So we're kind of like a cousin to a UXR team that sits within product engineering org. So I sit within a broader market research group that's inclusive of, yes, consumer market research, but then we also have the lines of business side. And then we also have a really sizable research operations function, just given all of the things that we're able to understand on platform. So that's generally how we're set up today.
Research operations that cuts across the UX and yourselves and so forth.
Yeah. So they generally work on the market research side, but they do lean over into UXR and being able to help with a lot of that quantitative end of the pieces that they're looking at.
So are those the people that keep sending me surveys saying LinkedIn is interested in your opinion? And I am taking like 20-minute deep dives in all. Should we be doing this and should we be doing that? Is that the research ops team or is that more you?
So it depends, right? It depends on...
That's Kendra directly.
That process. I'm waiting for it. Like, do you like that process?
We'll talk about it.
We'll get there.
I would say it's probably the web of all of us as you think about what a given research question might be, but we definitely lean on our operations partners to make it all happen.
Now, Kendra, we did a pre-pro call with you and our producer, and we talked. You have a lot of interesting perspectives, and you've been speaking out, you know, in the industry lately about some really interesting topics. One of which is the idea of like insights professionals today really having to have a diverse portfolio of capabilities in terms of methodologies, tools, and so forth. Talk to us a little bit about that and your vision for like the modern insights professional, especially the ones on your team.
Let's go back 20 years ago when I started out as in insights and it was in consumer market knowledge at P&G. What we found were there were individuals, there were teams who were focused on one thing. Like there was one person who was all about volume forecasting and they knew that thing inside out and that's what they did all day. Volume forecast. Let's fast forward to today and the types of things that I'm looking for my team to do that I foresee for insights teams throughout the industry. It's really being about less tied to one tool, really being open to the full schema of all of the tools and the methodologies that we have at our disposal. I think there's another piece too in being oriented in the business question as a starting point and really being curious about the different paths to being able to get there. It's more about the synthesis and less about any one given piece that comes together to that synthesis. So for me, it really requires insights professionals to be agile, to be open. You know, it used to be that research professionals would be the gatekeeper between the person with the business question and getting to the answer. But how do we bring partners along with us along that journey? And how do we remain flexible enough to meet really quick, you know, decision timelines? That's the way I think about it today.
Yeah, we've talked on this podcast. We've had a number of guests, and the theme, this theme has come up a lot in different contexts, but it's kind of like the way the industry has evolved with technology and software solutions and DIY research and insights people no longer being the gatekeepers, and like the business people being able to answer their own questions. It's just, it's a world where you're either going to have to evolve to be consultants and strategists, or those people that are just kind of waiting to give answers to questions that are being asked by others are going to slowly, you know, die off, I guess. Maybe that's too strong.
It is challenging. Even as you were talking, and I orient to what you were talking about, I still get this, you know, level of discomfort where it's like, yeah, you know, what does that mean for a whole function of people? But I really, truly believe that the power, that the differentiation is in our ability to be on that end of consultant, strategist, because it provides us so much more flexibility that's not just rooted in delivering a data set. And then people are like, thanks, go home. We'll call you next time we need something from you. It's like being able to show up at the table with the market context and having a broader context to the conversation, that's a standing seat at the table versus coming in to report out.
So this is interesting because we were talking to a chief strategy officer of a creative agency a few weeks ago. And I asked him the question, it's like, you know, all that stuff that you get when you're pitching to a client, they send you background information on, hey, here's the market landscape, the segmentation, all of that stuff that you're supposed to use in understanding the category and then going about building whatever pitch you want. And I asked him, do you actually read any of that stuff? And is it helpful? He smiled. He was saying good things about it. But one thing that it did come up from the conversation was, look, I feel like insights teams in most organizations, because of the corporate agenda to what needs to be done, they deliver things which are important, but they're typically where insights ends in most organizations is typically the starting point for most work that needs to go in. It's almost you've brought us to the starting point to the solutions that need to be made, but it hasn't actually gotten to solutions. And that was one thing that they were like, look, we understand the problem. Like, you have to get there before you can actually start to think solutions. But the one place where insights typically stops and says our work is done is, well, we deliver the broader insights. And I, as somebody who, you know, in my previous life was in roles similar to yours, I always felt like we stopped short and we are actually more responsible for the solution than we give ourselves credit for. I don't know if you feel the same way. I feel like you want to say, actually, Samrat, shut up, and I have different opinion.
I'm going to let Kendra talk because I got something to say, but I feel like Kendra's about to say, shut up, Samrat, and I want to give her the platform to do that.
I'm kidding.
But I want to hear you say, shut up, Samrat.
So first off, one, I think there's something about the value and the way that business partners think about the value of that upfront work. That upfront work, that understanding of the market landscape, you know, we call it assessing the landscape, understanding who we should be talking to, what we should be saying to them, and how we should go about it. That for me allows, that's the root of strategy, right? Like, it's an enabler to say, where are we going to play? I do agree with the fact of there's so much more value of saying, of bringing that understanding along the way so that as decision points are coming in bringing a widget to market, that we're still setting, that we're putting it in context of the current reality, not the reality we told you 18 months ago when you made, you know, the strategic bet, but keeping that current and keeping that fresh. I do think that that falls to insights professionals to show that value along the path. I've seen it work really well. Like I've seen it happen all the way to going to talk to a retail customer and being able to have those insights make the sale. So I feel I'm pretty confident in saying there are times where we do it really well. It comes down to the consistency of doing that and being able to extract that value and commercialize that value for our business partners. What I'm finding is a lot of times people are recognizing the value and then taking it and adopting that value as their own.
I love your passion.
Samran, I think what you were saying is very astute in terms of like the idea that it ends, it doesn't always end at a certain point, Kendra, to your point. I think a lot of times insights can win the day. A lot of times insights does have influence in a meaningful way, even at the like the retailer level or the keyest of the key stakeholders. But to me, from what I've seen and from what like from my perspective, it comes down to silos, corporate silos, and access to personnel, access to information. Kendra, you made the point about the temporal aspect of like, it needs to be current, things change, the research maybe. But to me, it's like insights has to assert itself to get a seat at the table, not just for influence purposes, but for context purposes, you know, like understanding all the different mechanisms within the business. If you're in CPG, it's R&D, it's the manufacturing, it's the finance piece. It's almost like, you know, with you, it's like, I have three kids and it's like with your kids, sometimes it's hard to explain some of the more complex decisions that you're making about them. And my daughter's 13 years old and it's like, I can't give her the full picture because some stuff I don't want to tell her and some stuff I haven't told her. And so with a narrow view, it's hard to really have an impactful perspective because you don't have 360 view. You know what I mean? So not to, I guess I'm doing it indirectly, but I'm not trying to admit as a metaphor, compare insights to a child, but
you just did that.
I just did, but
Kendra,
that's not my goal.
I think we should.
Yeah, I think we got to turn this off. But I think the idea is insights has to have. How can insights not just have a seat at the table, but have access to all the different levers that are being pulled and pushed by the senior decision makers? Certain stuff they'll never get access to, right? You'll never have access to everything that the corporate strategy team is seeing on the M&A side or at the forefront of the M&A side. But like, I don't know. What's your perspective on that? Because I think that's part of where you were going, Samrat, or at least where I took it.
It's similar but different. I think as I start thinking about, and Kendra, like, again, let's make this a conversation. Like, I feel like, you know, the way that insights teams have been developed, have been like, okay, there's the department head and they come in for the more critical questions that come in, strategic questions, this and that, which is great. But if you were to think about the head of insights as the CEO of the insights department, then the role of the CEO is very different, right? The CEO of a company is responsible for, let me network, let me make sure I know everything that's happening. Let me know how to solve for things going right to left and left to right. My job is not to be in the day-to-day, but my job is to be making sure my team and my company is at the foresight, at the forefront of everything. Do you get what I'm saying here? And that's where I felt like in the past, it always was like the head of department was, I come in for the more complicated problems. And the junior you were, you came for the simpler, more standard problems.
Yeah, well, interesting perspective you have there. For me, the tension that's created here is, I agree with, you know, the leadership that must be demonstrated as we think about leading insights teams. The challenge is, where does that leadership begin, right? Like, so if I started in an industry of when I was just an order taker, I just sat here and waited for my phone to ring, and then I got started on the questionnaire. It's very hard to one day wake up and expect that that individual is able to lead and think as, I consider it like a business owner, right?
Beyond,
with a stake in the actual business. So for me, and you know, we talked about this earlier, Corey, in our pre-talk, is it comes to mindset shifts. It's not just the behaviors that are required, like you must lead, you must go and talk to all of these different people. But part of this is us, you know, insights professionals feeling that we even have a seat at the table, because sometimes like we come in the room and we put ourselves in the corner. It's not anyone saying like you sit over there, but it's our own mindset about where we fit, the types of business questions that we can answer. So for me, it is a whole reorientation to the value that we provide that starts first with an internal insights problem and how we see ourselves.
So how do you do that? What would be the vision for shifting the mindset?
Yeah. So for me, it is the constant day to day. One is setting the vision. So some of the things that I talk about with my team internally have to do with first, you know, here are key things that I'm expecting you to do. Like here, first, we're going to have research roadmaps that are rooted first in business questions, not in methodologies. And then two is like, just, it's like marching it down. So you can't have it the one meeting and say, hey guys, we are consultants now. We're going to change our name.
Yeah.
But it is the day-to-day systems thinking that's required of saying, okay, you're delivering this. Who are all the other people that would care about these insights that you're coming forward with? What are all the other questions that come from answering these questions? What's next? I mean, there's this whole piece about the anticipation of it. And going back to something you all talked about earlier, it's also this piece of having all of this data and insights at our fingertips, being able to see like the world, and having a degree of restraint of understanding our audience's appetite for what we could serve up while also laying the stage. So playing this more from, this is a project I'm working on, to what's the 10th project that will come out of this? What is the long game that we're playing? And how do our day-to-day actions lead to being able to get to that point? And so for me, a lot of that, the way I approach it in my style is, setting that vision and then coming up with like the little bite-sized pieces that we can do every day that are within our control toward changing perceptions within the organization, but also perceptions and how we see ourselves.
So Kendra, you know, what you got me thinking was, I was getting flashbacks from back in the day. I used to live the life that you were doing. And then when I moved over to Neuro Insights, things took a very different turn, simply because now you're not just thinking about, hey, you know, a project is a project and you have to make sure that the project's delivered and is delivering value. But now every project has got to be a stepping stone to new learning, new understanding, either it's for the category or whatever. And I forgot that the siloed nature of the projects as well, when, you know, you're on the client side, it's like, yep, that was a project. It's done. It's over. Let's move on to the next one. And which got me thinking, like, we don't actually think in terms of by 2025, we need to be in a situation where we can understand this much of the world. And this is why all these projects we are doing in a particular way so we can get there. And the second thing that also stood out was, I was listening to a few podcasts. When you look at the intelligence agencies around the world, they are set up with a very specific dictate. You are going to do this. Whereas with insights teams, it felt like, I have a question. I need to reach out to consumers. Who's the person I go to? Like, that's the, like, there's a big difference between the mandates that, you know, are self-declared that, no, we do this and we are going to do this versus, yeah, we have an ancillary capability that you can leverage every once in a while.
I think the idea of like the project work focused, like the emphasis on projects and the one project into the next, like the seeing the forest from the trees and evaluate, stepping back and looking at the body of work, starting to map out territories through projects. You're right, Samra. Both of you are saying it. It's not about a project or even about a series of projects. It's about where are we heading strategically, right? And what are we learning macro, you know, not micro, with it, project to project to project to project, which is where you're driven, right? Like any consultative type of role, it's, I used to be a lawyer. It was like a deal and the next deal and the next deal, you know, but, and McKinsey, they're doing the next, I don't know, acquisition, this or that. It's the same thing with insights, you know, but maybe even more pronounced. It's interesting.
I mean, for me, I just call it a research roadmap. So thinking about the next 18 months, what are we collectively going to learn? And so it is not, what are we as market researchers going to learn? It's not even that. It is, what do we need to learn to be able to deliver XYZ for our brand? You know, to be the next billion-dollar brand. What do we need to deliver? What are our outstanding questions? And then what are the things we need to go off and answer? And then we get to the who is best suited to answer that. So who has the required skill sets to be able to do it? Who has the capacity and time to be able to do that? And then we look across the cross-functional team and say, great, this is how we're going to divide and conquer. And this is how we're going to come back to each other and be able to build on a body of knowledge. And we're not duplicating work. We're not repeating work. We're not coming back with data intentionally, coming back with, you know, data that conflicts with one another. If there are conflicts, we're having the conversations to be able to understand and dimensionalize for our business partners versus confuse them. So, you know, I'm fairly passionate about taking this longer term view to anything that we choose to take on.
As Kendra was talking, I was thinking about the McKinsey example as well, and just trying to play it together. One of the things that McKinsey does really well, or most of the consulting companies do really well, like you have these, they're not methodology experts, but they're subject matter experts. And by subject matter, I mean, hey, social media, what do we see is going to happen? And then you have industry experts, right? So what do we think is happening in the world of luxury? And then you have these two people sit down and then they start to talk about luxury, social media and luxury, the intersection and what it means. And what that becomes is these then become consultants. Of course, I'm not saying like McKinsey are experts. Most of them are kids who don't know what they're doing. And then, you know, over time they get smarter.
But they charge $1,500 an hour.
But they charge a lot, right? So God bless them, love them. Like I have cousins there, you know, I'm very happy for them. But what I'm saying is that model actually was something that inspired me a lot, which was, why don't I have subject matter experts on my team? Why don't I have people who are, hey, what do, and Kendra, just like in your world of, you know, within LinkedIn, small and medium business enterprises and people that work in those companies, the kinds of things they need versus the technology experts, blah, blah, blah. And the way that, I just don't know whether we are setting ourselves up in a way that we are knowledge matter experts. And I just don't know how to do it because it's so hard.
I'm actually reflecting on what you're sharing because I think there's insight in that. When we think about SME subject matter experts and how that comes into play, I think traditionally for market research, that could be, you know, audience expertise, you know, like I know this audience really well, or I know this industry really well. But thinking about the cross section of that and how we bring that together is very interesting for me. Some of the things that I've tried in that space would be, I really think it comes into like the knowledge synthesis and being able to bring together these pieces and having a point of view about the synthesis of that. So And that's the place of where we're like, technology can greatly aid us in being able to save us time and getting to that synthesis. And the overlay of the POV, I think that's some of where we start getting into that point. But again, I put that also in the category of, it's a bit of a different way of thinking, because it's taking the researcher outside of the place of, you know, even the tool
research.
Piece. Like, yeah. I am this, I am the forecaster. I can forecast anything you might need into, I'm the expert on mid-sized businesses. Here's the perspective. Mm-hmm. And also knowing where, not having all the answers, but knowing where to look, where to reach out to, and serving as that resource for a technologist, mm-hmm. you know, a product manager who might really be trying to chew on this and figure it out.
And it doesn't even have to be like this insights person, this full-time insights person is fully dedicated to that one vertical or category or niche. It could be that you're having like kind of like subspecialties across the board within your insights team, where this one is spending 30% of their time within this niche and becoming an expert and doing some of that synthesis, maybe special projects around that wouldn't otherwise have been done if not for this person really developing their skill set in X niche. It's an interesting point, Samrat. I like the thinking.
And it also, and Kendra, like now, and you were talking about this as well, Cody, like, with the democratization of the tools and the, you know, with AI and all of that stuff. Yeah, you can be like, we don't need experts in research methodologies. Like there was a time when it was needed, when everything was being done in-house. Now you have people who are, you know, who can do it quite well. You just need to be smart enough to be able to say, did I do it? Like, is this scientifically robust, whatever. But insights should be the place where, you know, you go to become an expert for a category, or you go to become an expert for a particular subject that the organization's interested in. And it becomes one of those transition areas. It's like, hey, I want to develop my skill set in small and medium businesses. So I'm coming into insights. I'm going to work on a bunch of different projects across different parts of the company that are dealing with small and medium businesses. So I can develop that understanding. So within a couple to 3 years, I can start to take care of the small and medium businesses.
And then you're a consultant. Then you're a true consultant. Then they're going to come to that insights person, and that insights team is going to be bringing that insights person for this specialized skill set.
And that then, because that's, again, taking it out of the McKinsey playbook. Keep them as consultants, send them over to the client side, and make them now buy the services, right? Like, let's call it what it is.
Yeah, well, in summary, I'd like, you know, rose up out of my seat. I'm leaning in because part of, you know, that's been part of the challenge, you know, for me personally. I can only speak for myself in thinking about, even thinking about like the knowledge drain or things like that, where, you know, you get really skilled. The best insights professionals tend to be the people who come in and then they say, enjoy my time here. I'm headed over to corporate strategy. I'm headed over to, you know, marketing. And they see it as a place to come, mm-hmm. but it's not even necessarily viewed as an essential rotation to leadership. And I love, you know, kind of thinking about what's the positioning that comes into that, where it is a destination for people who see themselves as leaders within the organization. And I just love that whole, you know, positioning of insights as like this consultancy where you're able to go deep and gain this expertise that you can take on with you to other places.
And you know what? It's going to be a mind shift change for a lot of insights people, because it's going to be like, look, man, you're not getting a project. Like, you're not getting projects. You have to go and find these projects. Like, if you want to be an SMB expert, you have to go to different teams and get those projects from them to do it. You have to get them to give you budget to do it. And then you have to have the throughput to be able to execute that within 18 months. So after 18 months, you're an expert. The onus is on you. Like, you have come to us to become an expert in the topic. I think this is where the give and take has to be. And then the insights organization, on the other hand, is providing the tools and trainings and ways of thinking, how to talk about it, how to influence people, how to network, how to deploy solutions, how to not stop at just first project report. And that's how it becomes, like, this person becomes a full leader. And then I think, you know, you'll see budgets flow back into insights as opposed to marketing keeping all the budgets and saying, here's $5, go see what you can do.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, by tomorrow.
I feel like you're stepping all over my toes, or, you know, all of these pieces. This is a rich discussion.
Yeah. All right. Listen, I love the direction. Yeah. I wanna actually explore another topic that you've talked about before, Kendra, which is kind of the birth of foresights and how, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems like you're seeing, you think insights is moving into, like, in part a foresights role within organizations. Mm-hmm. So we do quite a bit of work with various foresights to, like, some of the leading foresights organizations in the, mostly in the food space. And I find it interesting seeing the growth of foresights as an industry. It's a fledgling industry. Most, even large enterprises, don't have, like, super robust foresights groups. They have, like, 2 people, 4 people, 5, 7 people. But what is, am I putting words in your mouth when I say that you see foresights as kind of like a future core function of insights as a core function in and of itself?
I do see it as a core function, and maybe I should define it further. So I think of insights today as us reporting out on things that are happening today. Like, oh, we launched a project. Here's mm-hmm. what's going on. Here's what's going on with our brand. And even looking maybe 12 months out, like, this is what we see 12 to 18 months out. When I talk about foresights, it's just being able to lean in and being, and maybe it's that dreamer part of me, right? Like, leaning into the ability to forecast, to think about alternative futures for which our brands and products will play in, and embracing that. I think of it less, when I say foresights, I'm not just talking about the trendy teams who are coming out with the glossy decks and telling you about, like, you know, what the new colors will be, or what, you know, what the tastes will be. I am really talking about the essential function to being able to walk through alternative realities for teams. Mm-hmm. And that just becoming a part of our required skill set. And there's lots mm-hmm. of ways to go about doing that.
I guess what I'm saying is, though, we're saying the same thing, but we're saying it differently. I mean, the trendy, what's the next color and stuff like this. Yes, there are agencies, there's organizations that are doing it. And there's money in it, and, like, that's being put into it. But at least from what I've seen, the really robust thinking about the future, scenario planning, like, that is happening. That is kind of like giving birth to foresights as an entity, oftentimes through insights, oftentimes reporting to insights. Oftentimes it's insights people that are kind of specializing and calling themselves foresights people, at least in my mind. But, you know, like, I feel like I don't think that was around when you were at P&G. I don't know if, or was it?
The funny thing is, it was kind of. So my last role at P&G, I worked on the Olay anti-aging, but then a part of my job was called Viewfinder. So this was where we were working with, like, external agencies, and across all of our categories, they came in with these, like, kind of cultural trends. So it was my mm-hmm. job to take the team through the cultural trends, like, have them immersed in those trends. And then we led ideation based upon that. Yeah. So it was like, let's do ideation within this trend. Let's think about the technologies that we have coming further out. And then from there, it went into, like, a screener that we placed globally. And then I was able to tell each of the brands, as you think about your 3-year pipeline, here's how you should be thinking about it. I'm sure it's gone that much further. You know, we're 15 years removed from that type of work. But even then, we were thinking about it.
Kendra, I was using the same sort of system, like, 5 years ago. So I think, like, a decade went by. The tools became sharper, but the principles were the same.
I've really enjoyed this, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't at least... So actually, two topics. Let's start with AI. I think you have a unique point of view on AI and integration into the ways of working within Insights functions and so forth. You know, humor us with your perspectives on where is AI? Where are you seeing AI going? What's the way to integrate it, at least today, while it's still such early days as an Insights function?
I feel like it's a bit of a pivot, but sure. Still in the same way. Just to be clear, like the way I come at AI is most from how do we modify traditional ways of working in market research to be able to take in AI capabilities. I am not the technical expert on AI, so that's the disclaimer. The way I think about it is this AI provides an awesome opportunity for market research. It provides the opportunity for exploration, experimentation. That's my first piece. Like, we should be experimenting today and getting a good sense for what the offerings are out there. Secondly, we shouldn't just be adopting these tools because it seems like the right thing to do. We need to be looking against the goals and the things that we are trying to achieve as an insights organization and thinking about how AI can enable us to either do it faster, better, or be more coordinated in how we go about getting things done. And I think really setting up, once you've done the experimentation, the intentions behind how teams should be using these tools, also setting up guardrails. So, you know, in doing the experimentation, we don't throw away the traditional methods. Instead, we sit them side by side in parallel to be able to understand what's working, what's not working, and then also take a measured risk assessment to taking on new tool sets. For me, it's exciting because our ability to adopt AI tools will open us up to more time to do the things that we talked about, which is leaning in as consultants and finding ways that AI can take over those tasks that do not require our intervention as humans and us to spend more time on those human-centric tasks. So that's kind of my, you know, spiel on that, but I'm really interested in where you all sit with this.
Well, but before we get into us, philosophically, I get that being your perspective, but what are you saying experiments? How are you thinking about experimenting with AI from a kind of compliance and a data perspective? Like what are you, to the extent you can share, what's your tactically, how are you starting to integrate it experimentation-wise? Yeah.
So just a very practical example that's been out there in the marketplace that we've shared over the last year and a half. So I think about things like our brand tracker and just saying, everybody's familiar with the brand tracker. We run it monthly. We get back things. It doesn't move much. I'm trying to breathe life into it. And so for us, it was like, how might we lever?
Kendra, should it move much? Like, should it move every month? Like,
no, I don't think you want it moving much. But exactly. But also, like, we're reporting out on it. You know, we're trying to look for, like, what can we tell you new and different this time? So with that in mind, we were like, well, why don't we leverage, ChatGPT just to be able to understand what's out there in from a category association standpoint? And then leveraging that against what our attributes say within our brand tracker to say, hey, we're really doing a good job of covering this part or landscape of category associations. Here are other places where we might go. So to me, like, that's a very practical example. We have parts of our team that are thinking about things like synthetic data, that are thinking about, you know, kind of the future of AI and how we can be at the leading edge of that. The other part is just the practical stuff too, right? Like, how can we leverage it to help in our everyday work processes? How can we leverage it to be able to do a jump start? Like, okay, I need to put a discussion guide together. Like, let's see how far I can get on this. The other part that we've been very intentional about is we're not just out there in like an open source environment. You will know, like when I talked about the brand density example, we felt comfortable using ChatGPT for category associations, but we were not throwing everything from our brand tracker out there in a public environment. But we've also been thinking about like, what are those tools that we need kind of like inside to be able to use? And then how do we also kind of use things that are more publicly available? And then the other thing was, yeah, this is just good hygiene, I think, is, you know, we sat down and put together an action plan to say, these are the four different areas that we want to experiment on. And here's what it looks like. Here's how we're partnering with others. The other thing is we have the ability to be within a technology company where we have engineers who are thinking about this every day. And so it's sharing back and forth, going as far as we can, but then also being ready to adopt some of the capabilities that they're developing. That's another, you know, part of the power as we're seeking to develop capabilities in this space.
See, you're so lucky that way. I mean, given the collaborations totally. And the associations with Microsoft, like the stuff you can do, or the stuff that you have access to, a lot of companies.
Assuming don't. You are and I was just looking over the fence.
I don't know. I mean, legally, so, I don't know what the limitations are of the partnership, but.
I will say, you know, we are a Microsoft company. So, you know, there is a degree of sharing. I'll take it another way. It's not what you asked me, but it's also like even in the insights organizations, like where we established quarterly meetups where we're just sharing insights on what we're experimenting with, what we're learning. So we've done a lot of that as well. And just saying like, okay, where are you all? What are some of the things you're learning both like in the market research world, but like as you're using tools internally and leveraging that just to be able to accelerate our knowledge in this area.
So I don't know, Corey, if you've seen this, but there's this new functionality on LinkedIn now. And one of the kids from my school showed it to me was, I was telling them that, hey, look, you've sent me your resume. You're asking me to help you for this job. I just don't feel like it's a good fit. So what this person did was on LinkedIn, went in, applied for the job. And as you're trying to apply for the job, it basically, there's AI that reviews your resume and tells you all the places where you're missing key skills that they've asked for the job description. And I was like, holy moly, like, I can't believe that this exists. Because can you imagine that? Now, you get a resume
from custom someone. Resumes from automatons that are exactly. That are written by AI, yeah.
It is, yeah, it's wild. But it didn't lie. Like, it wasn't making stuff up for the resume. It was totally. Just saying your resume is lacking this. And the kid was like, so, like, I was trying to give them advice on how to, you know, how they can best talk about their resume in those lights. But I was amazed that LinkedIn had been so quick to deploy it. I did not realize that you guys were so far ahead.
Yeah, and you're doing AI. And yeah, you have a bunch of AI in the product outside of the feed.
It is definitely an area of focus for the company and thinking about how we can really service to our mission vision of creating economic opportunity. And, you know, being able to leverage technology to do that.
Yeah, it's an interesting, the whole collaboration at LinkedIn must be, this isn't a question, this is an observation for you, Kendra, but like you being owned by Microsoft, which is one of the leading basically AI research organizations in the world, which themselves having 49% of OpenAI, which is the maybe leading organization in the world. And then they have their own situations with the board, sitting on the board and so forth. It must be I think LinkedIn is an awesome tech brand in general. And it's kind of sat above a lot of the other problems with social media and so forth, in my mind. It's a much healthier kind of community. But also the tie-ins with AI and sitting within Microsoft OpenAI triangle situation, it's rad. I think it's fascinating. I don't know. That's not a question. It's kind of just an observation for you. Gotcha. I don't know if you do have any thoughts, though. But yeah, listen, really appreciate the time, Kendra. It's been fascinating. It's always a pleasure, like when you're connected to people, but you don't get a chance to talk very often, and then bam, we get like an hour of just like deep conversation about the industry. So it's been a pleasure. Samrat, any final thoughts?
Well, no final thoughts. I thought this was, I don't think conversation like this should have final thoughts. I definitely feel like we need a part two. And we should do it soon, Kendra.
Thank you both so much. I appreciate it.
Inspiring Insights is powered by Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta with help from Mather De Leon. It was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant and was edited by Joshua Ramsey. If you're into the show, why not follow Stories Bureau on LinkedIn, where you'll also find Corey and Samrat. And visit storiesbureau.com to learn more about how we tell stories that empower insights for companies all over the world. We'll be back in a month with another insightful conversation that'll inspire you to go beyond the job description. Until then, thanks for listening.